This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This show is for college recruiting fans.
What a run! He's got a lane! Wow! Touchdown! What an athlete!
The inside story on the Ducks, the Beavers, the national recruiting scene, and high school prospects across Oregon and Southwest Washington. This is Recruiting with Andrew Nemec, the Oregon Live and Oregonian recruiting expert players, coaches, and fans follow.
Ooh-wee.
Recruiting with Andrew Nemec on 1080 The Fan.
Hello and welcome to Recruiting with Andrew Nemec on 1080 The Fan. It's called the early signing period. It has really truly become signing day, essentially. I know we still call signing day February, whatever it is, but this is the real signing day. The vast majority of kids signed yesterday. I think something like 80 to 85% of the nation's prospects signed yesterday. It is signed, sealed, delivered, done. And what an amazing day it was around the country. There were some unpredictable things. There were some very predictable things. But we've got to start with, and I think Will Darkins has the audio, the commitment of five-star linebacker Justin Flo, the number two recruit in the history of the Oregon Ducks football program, the number one rated uncommitted kid in the country entering the day yesterday, and the number 40 ranked recruit of all time. Let's listen to his commitment.
Without further ado, for the next 3 or 4 years, I'll pursue my athletic and academic career at the University of... Oregon.
Sounded nervous. It'd be hard to be an 18-year-old on national television like that and announce your commitment. Justin Flo, the number 40 prospect ever, the 40th best high school football player in the history of recruiting rankings. He's like 60 spots higher than AJ Green. He's ahead of Mark Sanchez. He's ahead of guys that have won the Heisman Trophy. It's unbelievable. Brandon Huffman of 24/7 Sports, the national recruiting director there, said he might be the best linebacker to come out of California in 20 years. And suddenly Oregon has an absolutely formidable front seven with Kayvon Thibodeau, the number one prospect in the nation last year. Justin Flo, the number one linebacker in the country this year. Noah Sewell, the number two linebacker in the country this year. It's unbelievable what Mario Cristobal is putting together. Talking to people around the industry, the combination of Justin Flo and Noah Sewell together is something the likes of which you don't see in college football anywhere very often. It's rare at Alabama. It's rare at Georgia. It's rare at Clemson. Teams will get a couple of good linebackers. They won't get the number one and number two inside linebacker in the country. It's extremely rare. What Oregon put together is incredible. By the way, today, Justin Flo named the USA Today Defensive Player of the Year in high school football. Kayvon Thibodeau won it last year. It's back-to-back years with the USA Today Defensive Player of the Year. Oregon recruiting at unheard-of levels. This class is 18th nationally. It's number two in the Pac-12, according to 24/7 Sports. And people say, how could it be 18th when two five-stars, Dante Manning, potentially could still enter the mix? That would jump him up right around, I think, to 13th. He's the number 30 prospect in the nation, just off five-star status. He'd be the highest-rated defensive back ever to commit to the class if, in fact, he chooses Oregon. Keely Ringo still sitting out there. I think he's going to Georgia. He's a five-star recruit. People say, with all that, all the stars, five stars, four stars, the number three pro-style quarterback in the country, Jay Butterfield, how could this class be 18th? And something I talked about for a long time. We've talked about it for a year. No matter who we had on, we'd ask them, where do you think Oregon would finish? They'd often say top 10 or number one in the Pac-12. And I'd say, you know, I think it's two or three in the Pac-12 and it'll finish in the teens. And the reason was Oregon needed offensive and defensive linemen in a big way, and they weren't available on the West Coast in terms of highly rated guys. They signed 9 offensive and defensive linemen yesterday. And you could even argue one of those kids, or another kid, a 10th kid, is a defensive end outside linebacker. So you could make the argument they signed 10 offensive and defensive linemen. And we had Greg Biggins on last month, and he said the number 2, number 3 offensive tackle and defensive tackle on the West Coast this year would be about 30th in the South region. When you're recruiting like that and the talent starts to rise up where the top programs have to take a kid that maybe would fall to even like a Vanderbilt or a Duke or a Mississippi State or an Ole Miss, it makes it that much harder to climb up the rankings. Oregon had to load up this class with linemen. We knew they needed linemen, and they had to go all over the country to get it. The degree of difficulty in this recruiting class was really high. But I still think in terms of top 6-7 commitments in this class, it's a better class than Oregon's ever had 6-7 deep. Their star-studded roster is as good as anything they've ever signed. It's that they had to pick and choose linemen that fit their system that weren't very highly rated. But it's still a phenomenal class. Justin Flo committed. That was huge. They did lose, and this was sort of lost in everything. I read recruiting analysis in this last 24 hours, and Oregon across the board is a winner, and some people see them as the number one winner. When they start listing the winners and losers, Oregon's number one. And I think Oregon did a phenomenal job. They got Justin Flo. They got Robbie Ashford, the number 10 dual threat quarterback in the nation. They signed Jay Butterfield, again, the number 3 pro style quarterback in the country. He's going to enroll early. And they did all of that without an offensive coordinator. That's really impressive. But they did lose 4-star wide receiver Johnny Wilson to Arizona State. And they did lose Miles Slusher. And people think, well, you know, Miles Slusher. Miles Slusher is the number 5 safety in the nation. It's not like Miles Slusher was some 3-star pro. Miles Slusher is an All-American. He's an Adidas All-American safety. Johnny Wilson, 6'6", 230 pounds. He was one of the top 4 or 5 wide receivers you've signed in the history of the, or you got committed in the history of the program. Losing both those guys stung a little bit. And I listen, Justin Flo's the story. They got the number 1 player in California in back-to-back classes. They got the number a guy that was in the discussion for the number 1 defensive player in the nation in back-to-back classes. That's all phenomenal news. Phenomenal news. But I was a little surprised that it wasn't Oregon winner with an asterisk that said they did lose 2 of their best 6-7 commitments yesterday as well.
So I know we're not at the complete end of this recruiting cycle.
Correct.
But from where we are right now, looking at the Oregon Ducks, what do you think is the main theme, factor, or tenet that allowed for these high-profile guys to choose Oregon over some of the huge Power 5 teams, say like Georgia, LSU, Clemson, who completely cleaned up? Like, what is it about Oregon really overall that draws these guys when you also look at an Oregon team that essentially knocked off a fellow Pac-12 competitor from getting into a college football playoff? Right now, if you look at the Pac-12 and you're a player, you have to say to yourself, man, there's a high likelihood that even if I'm on a great team in this conference, I'm not making it into one of those New Year's Six bowls.
You're right. I think there is no West Coast power right now. I mean, I think that's pretty clear. USC is really down, and we'll get to it. It'll be a whole segment.
Really
today.
Down, dude.
They finished dead last in the Pac-12 in recruiting.
Well, and they were at some point. I remember I was looking at a tracker. They were under Louisiana Marymount.
I mean,
in terms of rankings, like bad, really bad.
I mean, I don't think people realize how bad their recruiting class was. It's horrible. It was in the 70s nationally. They were behind mid-major programs, multiple. They were tied with Middle Tennessee State. And people say, well, it's the first day of the early signing period. That's when 80 to 85% of the top prospects and the guys that are going to go Power 5 signed. They're all signed now. So it's the end of the cycle. Yes, it's the first day of the signing period, but it's the absolute end of a year's worth, and this is now a multi-year operation to recruit these kids. We got to the last day. We got to the finish line, and they looked next to them, and instead of seeing Alabama and Clemson, they were in the JV race running against Middle Tennessee State. They only landed one of the top 32 kids in California, and that opens up an avenue. Right now, there is no West Coast power. And because of that, the state of California, one of the top three producers of talent in the entire country, right up there with Texas and Florida, they don't have an in-state program that is cleaning up that talent. When USC's a dynasty, they clean up that talent. What has allowed Oregon to pull this off? Mario Cristobal's an ace recruiter. They have multiple coaches recruiting the same kid, so when a guy like Marcus Arroyo leaves, there's no issue. He's got three other coaches he knows really well. Keith Hayward and Coach Dante are as connected as any coaches as you'll find in the Pac-12 with the state of California, and USC isn't getting them. Southern California is open for business, and no one's going and getting them except the University of Oregon.
So I don't think those kids are buying the old Clay Helton nice guy act kind of thing.
Well, there's a lot of people who think they delayed this for a year. Kind of behind the scenes, the talk is that they may be delayed firing him for a year because there's a candidate they really like that they think isn't available now but will be next year.
Urban Meyer. So
they just hung on for one more year before they could hire the guy they wanted to hire. So who wants to be a part of that? Who wants to go be a part of a program that's underachieved to the degree that they've underachieved? And say what you will about this class, and believe me, we will. 12th in the Pac-12 is an absolute abysmal embarrassment for the riches they have, for the avenue they have to recruit, for the amount of talent that's in their own backyard. It's embarrassing. But that roster right now is chock full of more 5-stars than anybody else in the country, and they can't win. They're not winning games, not consistently, not at a high enough level to justify these kids saying, you know what, I'm going to give up the opportunity to go to Clemson. I'm going to give up the opportunity to go to Alabama. You're right. The very best kids in California, when they want to play for a college football championship, they want to go elsewhere. DJ Uiagalelei, the number one prospect in the nation, he wears number 5 in high school because of Reggie Bush. His family grew up going to USC games. That was his dream school. And then when he got to this level, he went, they're not really recruiting me. The reason is they liked Bryce Young better, the number one dual threat quarterback in the country. So they recruited the heck out of him. They got him. Alabama ends up flipping him. So in that time, then they come back to DJ and say, hey, sorry, we know you're the number one recruit in the nation now. Any interest? It's like, you slow played me. No, I'm going to Clemson. So the number one whole prospect in the nation was slow played by USC to such a degree it insulted his family, it insulted him, and he wanted no part of it. Bryce Young, the guy they put all their eggs in this one basket. By the way, Bryce Young, good friends with Justin Flo. The goal, get Bryce Young. Bryce Young's good friends with Justin Flo. We get Justin Flo. We've got two of the top 4 kids in the nation, and we're rolling. Except it fell apart. Bryce Young flips to Alabama. Justin Flo says, I'm not coming here myself. I'm not carrying this class by myself. They have one 4-star prospect in this whole class. One 4-star. The rest are all 3-stars. USC had years when I was growing up, when I started following recruiting, where they had a handful of 4-stars. It was all 4-stars and 5-stars. They had whole classes. They didn't have a single one.
Dude, Joe McKnight, I remember that signing was a big effing deal.
He was the number one recruit in the nation.
Yeah.
And they've had a number of classes where you go back even 2 years ago. 2 years ago, they signed the top 4 kids in the state of California. This year, they got one of the top 31 kids in California. It's inexcusable. We will break down Oregon's class, the offensive side of the ball, the defensive side of the ball. Oregon State signed their best class since 2013, including the number one junior college quarterback in the country. I really like Chance Nolan. I think he's got a chance to be great. And then we will get back to this USC thing because it's ridiculous. We'll also do a rundown of the entire Pac-12. That's what's coming up on Recruiting with Andrew Nemec on 1080 The Fan next. Yesterday was the start of the early signing period. 80 to 85% of the Power 5 conference prospects around the country put ink to paper, making it official exactly where they're going to go to school. The number one uncommitted prospect in the nation going into yesterday was Justin Flo. He chose the University of Oregon. It is a phenomenal class defensively. phenomenal class defensively. The number one inside linebacker in the nation, Justin Flo. And this was an interesting recruitment. I predicted last week, just before the weekend, that he would choose Oregon. And I was hearing a lot of things about him choosing Oregon. And then he took a late visit to USC. And how loud was the pro-Oregon talk on Saturday? I called just about everybody I possibly could to talk to, whether they were 7-on-7 coaches, high school coaches, or various people in the industry, parents of kids who are being recruited in Southern California, parents of recruits and recruits themselves from Oregon, tried to get a hold of some recruits from USC and say, where do you think he's leaning? I could not find a single person to say anything other than Oregon on Saturday. That's how much it sounded like a slam dunk. And I got to about noon, and I talked to probably 10 to 15 people and went, man, this is done. And then I was like, I got to find somebody that says something else. It can't be this much of a slam dunk. And I didn't until late Saturday night. And that's when I started to hear some USC rumblings. But just Oregon was in it the whole way. And USC was throwing up a Hail Mary with the worst class in the Pac-12. And that's why I stuck with my prediction, on top of the fact that it sounded like for a long time, Justin Flo liked Oregon. His family liked USC quite a bit. And as long as Justin could kind of decide for himself where he wanted to go to school, it seemed like it was going to be Oregon. So I wasn't real surprised he chose Oregon. That was a welcomed move for Oregon fan, I'm sure.
More than welcomed.
My phone blew up. Mentions blew up. People were very excited about Justin Flo. But it wasn't shocking. And that's what's funny about all the different moving pieces about Oregon's class. They had two major decommitments, four-star wide receiver Johnny Wilson, four-star defensive back safety Miles Slusher. I predicted both those moves, and a lot of people did. I'd love to say, like, wow, I was way out on a limb there. Most people who cover the team said Slusher and Wilson are going to leave. They're going to get Justin Flo. I think they're going to get Dante Manning down the road. There's some debate about whether or not they're going to get Kelee Ringo. I think he's going to Georgia. And then Robbie Ashford, the number 10 dual threat quarterback in the country, is a guy to watch. The reason I didn't think he'd sign yesterday, he might commit but not sign, is that Oregon doesn't have an offensive coordinator. So I thought there was a possibility that he wouldn't sign. And if you didn't follow pretty closely, he tweeted out initially, I'm going to sign in February, but I'm committed to Oregon. And then about 10 minutes later, he goes, change of plans, I signed. So locks it in. Oregon's class defensively, Justin Flo, five-star linebacker, the second highest rated recruit Oregon's ever gotten, behind only Kayvon Thibodeau last year. Noah Sewell is a top 10 signee of all time. If Dante Manning commits, Dante Manning slides in as a top 15 commit all time and would be the highest rated defensive back commit of all time. And if we're going over this, and people who have listened to the show will go, feels like you say that every year. It's because I have. When Mace Funa committed last year, he was the highest rated linebacker commit of all time. Keith Brown was second, who in the class of 2021, and now Noah Sewell jumps Mace Funa and became, for about a week, the highest rated recruit, linebacker recruit of all time at that position, and then Justin Flo. So the three highest rated linebacker commits in program history, Mace Funa, Justin Flo, and Noah Sewell, are all on campus, will all be on campus together next year. And the fourth highest is Keith Brown. He'll join them a year later. Unbelievable riches. And the same thing is true of the defensive backs. I've said that I think at different times Thomas Graham was the highest rated. Diamador Lenore was higher than, or was lower than him. Thomas Graham jumps him. Mikhail Wright jumped those two to become the highest. And now it would potentially be Dante Manning. So you'd have the four highest defensive back commits of all time, all on campus together with Diamador Lenore, Thomas Graham, Mikhail Wright, and potentially Dante Manning. It's really hard to keep track of because it's extremely, extremely fluid.
So what kind of message do you think that this puts out to other Pac-12 teams? Because I know for the most part, when it comes to recruiting and you're putting together a team and you're putting together a type of culture, you have something in mind and you try to seek out the players that will accomplish that task. But then there's other times where people will set the narrative for what a league will be in either the next half decade or possibly even decade, if you want to take a look at a team like USC. And it seems like Oregon right now with these type of moves, they're turning the page on what their narrative was, which was, we're about blur offense, fast guys, that's what we do. And it's about what Mario Cristobal, that type of SEC strong defensive sensibility he's trying to bring to this program right now. Do you think that you're going to see other Pac-12 teams start to react off of that and say, if they're going to recruit defensive heavy, then that's what we have to do too to compete?
I don't think they can. There aren't that many great defensive prospects on the West Coast. And we've seen articles breaking that down. You can look at the rankings and really break that down. There aren't a lot of great defensive linemen. There aren't a lot of great linebackers that come out of the West region. This is an extremely deep year. Keith Brown is a really good linebacker. He's the number one inside linebacker in the nation in 2021. He's right on the bubble of the top 100 prospects in the nation. It's extremely rare to have these linebackers. Most years, Noah Sewell would be the number one inside linebacker in the nation as a five-star prospect. It's a 50-50-ish every year whether the top inside linebacker in the country is a five-star. This just happens to be a year where they're both ridiculously good, they're both on the West Coast, and they both chose Oregon. It's a rare set of circumstances. So to answer your question, no, I don't think anybody else is going to be able to do this. And you're right. This is the turning of a page. We saw Chip Kelly's dynasty with a blur offense with guys like DeAnthony Thomas, LaMichael James, little scat backs and little playmakers that I'm not trying to tear it down. It was amazing to watch.
It was a different style.
It was just a totally different style. And this is going to be the dawning of a new era for Oregon that is built on physicality on both sides of the ball in the front seven along the offensive line. They got a big running back in Trey Benson, who's kind of a one cut back there. I think the vision for him is potentially for him to be like a TJ Yeldon type of back. If you can remember him from Alabama.
Oh, I remember TJ Yeldon.
I think that's the hope for Trey Benson. He wasn't a jitterbug in the hole, but he would plant his foot and go, and he was tough to bring down. I think that's what they hope for TJ Yeldon or for Trey Benson is a TJ Yeldon type of player. And the other thing this does is establish Oregon is the recruiting power in Southern California. Right now, clearly it's not USC. They were last in the Pac-12. They've got massive problems. So someone needs to pick up that mantle in Southern California in the Pac-12 to reassert the conference's dominance. And it looks like if it's going to be anyone, it's going to be Oregon.
Well, and another really bad sign for other California teams is the leave of Bo Baldwin. Bo Baldwin was brought in with the sensibility of a head coach who might be able to also help recruit. And one thing that I noticed, and you probably had way more foreknowledge about this than I did, but I noticed that on Casey Philkins' recruitment page that he was recruited by Bo Baldwin and that Philkins flipped and went to Stanford. And that, you know, Bo's leaving for a head coaching job at Cal Poly, which is not, don't get it twisted, that's not a lateral move. That is a step down. He used to be the head coach at Eastern Washington. This was supposed to be a step up. And it makes me think that there's just this feeling, like you're talking about, among California schools that's like, we're losing our grip on this thing.
And they are. I mean, they absolutely are losing their grip on this thing. UCLA did a nice job to bounce back to even be in the top half of the Pac-12 in recruiting after last year.
That was interesting.
Being in the bottom three or four.
I couldn't believe that. I don't know. That's something I would predict with UCLA. I mean, doing as they're still bad, but still being able to finish on top of somebody like USC or Cal.
It's unbelievable to see what's going on at those schools. I just, it's baffling, and it leaves things open. And when you leave something open for a staff that can recruit like Mario Cristobal, in the staff he's assembled, it's a dangerous thing. And this Oregon staff, they recruit constantly. And Keith Brown highlighted it when he came in here for an hour a few weeks ago. And he said, and he talked about on his visits, different visits. Like, I went there and they didn't have a schedule for me. It was, hey man, what do you want to do? You know, he said, Oregon has a bat cave, and I came out of the elevator and there were like 40 coaches and personnel screaming for me. And they all knew my name and my friend's name and my mom's name. And he compares that to Washington State. And he went there and they said, who are you? And it was literally a coach that had gone and visited him at his school already and shook his hand. And then he saw him in person again later and had no idea who he was. There's still Pac-12 schools that don't get it. They don't know what they're doing. And we're seeing which schools do and don't get it right now. And Oregon's taking advantage of the fact, if you're in a talent-rich area, you can't just rely on the fact that, hey, we have some tradition and we're a talent-rich area. You still have to be good at recruiting. And Oregon is just flat-out out-recruiting people right now.
You basically have to have no life. I don't know if Mario Cristobal has a life, dude. Like, Like, this type of recruiting is what we saw on par with, like, Urban Meyer. Like, you know, the whole story is about Urban Meyer winning the national title at Ohio State back in 2013, and that, you know, he celebrated on field and everything, but literally ran to a back room and got on the phone and just started calling recruits. And then stories about Nick Saban doing something similar and showing up to people's houses in pinstripe mafia suits looking like he's going to sell you a car. But, like, you know, parents down in that area where you're in a lower socioeconomic situation, you see somebody like that who looks professional that, you know, conveys himself as somebody who's going to take care of your kid. I think you're right. It's just that there's a fundamental misunderstanding among personnel.
The next layer, and I think this is where we start to get into territory of it hits a whole different level. The one thing that this staff hasn't done, they've recruited great linemen, Penei Sewell. They've recruited great linebackers. They've recruited great defensive backs. They've got an edge rusher in Kayvon Thibodeau, who's the best player in the country. This Oregon program still hasn't recruited wide receiver very well ever in its history. Oregon only has two players ever that were top 100 prospects in the class they were in that committed to Oregon. Only two top 100 prospects ever chose Oregon at receiver.
Yeah.
And the running back position. Oregon flat out hasn't recruited high-level running backs yet. They still haven't gotten a blue-chip running back, and I think that's the next wave. Oregon's going to have a great offensive line, and then Cristobal can sell, come run behind these guys. And if they can get a blue-chip running back to run behind them, that's the next. So people wonder, how does it get better? Because it's really good. But 18th, how does it get better? Last year they were 7th. How does it get better? Start bringing in some wide receivers and running backs, and then when you start getting those guys, those elite guys, then you can start talking about top 5 classes, top 3 classes in the country. But until they pair running back, receiver with what they're getting right now at quarterback, defensive line, offensive line, linebacker, and the secondary, until they're able to do that, they're still going to trail, which is a great problem to have, trail only Clemson, Ohio State, you know, Alabama, those programs of the world. They need to get a blue chip running back. They've got Seven McGee next year, the number 2 running back in the nation. I think next year is going to be a potentially top 5 or 6 class in the nation. It's stacking up that way already. They're already in the top 10 for 2021, and it's only going to get better. I want to talk Beavs. They had their best class since 2013. They landed the number 1 junior college quarterback in the nation. They landed a ton of JC talent. Can you build a program with that? I think you can. I think we're going to see this program get better and take another step forward in the next couple of years. We'll talk about that next on Recruiting with Andrew Nimmick on 1080 The Fan. The Oregon State Beavers had a good class, Will Darkins. Very solid effort after last year. It's a better class than last year. It's their best class since 2013. They competed with more Power 5 schools for the recruits they were getting. All positive signs. The number 1 junior college quarterback in the country, Chance Nolan, and we will talk about him in a minute. The number 3 defensive end in the country at the junior college level. 2 of the top 10 junior college defensive backs in the country. That's all good. That's a very good thing. 9th in the Pac-12. 48th in the country. A top 50 class. Very, very solid.
Yeah.
They deserve it.
It's been a long time, man. It's been a long time coming.
It has been a long time. Chance, you know what? Chance Nolan, the number 1 junior college quarterback in the country, I really like him. And I showed you his film and kind of gave you my breakdown. I think he has great pocket presence. I think he loves to stretch the field vertically, throwing the football. And when that's not there, he's a very, very capable runner, ran for over 1,000 yards. The question I have for him is going to be arm strength. He loops a lot of his passes, which is fine. There's nothing wrong with it. He's got a chance, I think, to be a very good Pac-12 quarterback. But he's going to be different than what Oregon State has seen in a while. I don't like to compare him to Seth Collins because Seth Collins was not a passer at all. Chance Nolan's a pretty good passer, but he is jitterbuggy when he's running downfield. He can really make moves. He's not just a guy who's going to, oh, I'm in trouble and run. He can actually break your ankles and make a play. I'm excited to see him extend plays with his legs, extend plays with the way he moves his feet in the pocket, stretch plays out, and then also if things break down, flush the pocket and get first downs. I think he's got a chance to win the starting job this fall.
Well, more than anything else, he is a talent. That's what it is. He is a talent. Jake Luton was somebody who had to establish himself and who had to really kind of gain enough experience, especially being in a sixth-year situation, to become an incredibly effective quarterback. Jebbia, you know, from all indications, at least from what people are saying on the inside, is not ready and will not be ready, even though I think you and I both thought watching the Civil War, again, he didn't look great, but he looked capable, but apparently that's not the case.
I talked to somebody who rewatched the film and watched real film of him
and
really actually had film, like not just I rewatched the game on TV,
sure,
and said he really struggled with his reads.
Yeah.
So I don't know. He looked capable on television. I talked to somebody who said it was not good.
Just having somebody behind center with physical ability evened out in both areas. Because you're right, this JC guy can run, and he's not afraid to throw it downfield, which with most college quarterbacks, that's one of the biggest challenges you have when you first step behind that D1 offensive line is, oh my gosh, am I really going to throw this thing past 15 yards?
And I think that was Justin Herbert's issue early for a little while. He had a hard time adjusting to when to really let loose, open up your shoulders, and really sling one deep. I like Chance Nolan. He's great. Tavis Shippen, the number 3 defensive end in the country, is a nice get. Alex Lemon, when Oregon State got him, was the number 1 junior college defensive end in the country. He dropped to number 2, still really, really good. He did not sign, and I reported last week I didn't think he would. There's some academic issues there, and I think it's possible he does not figure that out. He did not play football this year to focus on his academics and is still behind. That worries me. He should have been ready for having not played football. It's something to watch. It's still possible. There's still time, but this is not a good sign at all. The plan for him was to sign yesterday if he could have because his grades were okay. This means his grades are not okay. That's a problem. Rajon Wright's great. Alton Julian are great. Colorado wanted both of them. Alton Julian, 6'3", 190 pounds. Rajon Wright, 6'1", 6'2", 180, 185 pounds. They're good corners. They've been good corners at the junior college level. They're also cousins. And Nashawn Wright, Rajon's brother, is at Oregon State now. Oregon State hosted Alton Julian as a Colorado commit a day or two after that visit, or actually maybe a day or two before that visit. He announced his decommitment from Colorado, flipped to Oregon State. They landed Rajon Wright the day before the early signing period to get those guys signed was excellent. So they got better defensively in the back half of the back part of the defense and up front on the defense. That was key. They needed to get better defensively, and they got immediate injections there, and they also raised the competitive level and the talent and the variety of talent in their quarterback room. Those are wins. Those are phenomenal wins. But they were also 9th in the Pac-12, so I'm not going to just gush about this class and say how wonderful it is. If you want that, go somewhere else. It's a good class. It's improvement, but it's 9th out of 12 for a reason. And I'm going to talk about it. So if that bothers Beaver fan and that makes me biased, so be it. Here's the truth. At the end of the cycle, they recruited offensive linemen against Mountain West schools and Big Sky schools. That's the second year in a row they've had to do that. Corbin Sorensen was a 3-year starter at Portland State at tackle. His peak was third team all Big Sky, and it wasn't last year. Last year, he was not an all-conference performer in the Big Sky. He's expected to potentially be a rotational guy. I don't think they expect him to win a starting job. I don't have a problem with it. I don't have a problem with adding that piece for depth's sake, but if that's your best offensive line get and you needed offensive line, I'm a little worried about it. Cooper Darling had a Pac-12 offer. His other offers were the Mountain West, and then they hosted a Montana commit in the very last week and chose, I think, not to go after him. But at the end of a recruiting cycle, if you're hosting 3 or 4 offensive linemen and 2 of them, one's at Portland State and one's committed to Montana, that's not going to work long-term, particularly with what we're seeing in the Pac-12, where some of these teams, Stanford, Oregon, Washington, are beefing up front. The other question and concern I have long-term for Oregon State, the JC talent totally masks it right now, and it's good JC immediate injectable talent. Oregon State, according to 24/7 Sports composite rankings, which is an average ranking of rivals, 24/7 Sports and ESPN, only landed 1 high school recruit in the top 750 prospects in the country. Only 1 of the top 750 prospects in the country. They have to get better there. And listen, everybody can sell you as much as they want as this is the best class since 2013. It is. Part of that is that it was a really low bar before that. The other part is they did a great job recruiting the JC level, and they deserve a tremendous amount of credit for that. They do. Absolutely. Overwhelmingly, this is a positive step forward for Jonathan Smith's program. But if all we want to talk about is positives, then that means Oregon State fan is only satisfied with being ninth in the Pac-12. And I think they're potentially better than that. I think there's potential to be better than that.
Hey, man, we won five games.
And that's phenomenal, too.
Beaver basher.
I'm not a beaver basher in any way. They need to get better recruiting high school talent. Dude, I take so much crap from Beaver fan. It's unbelievable.
It's because you are, man. You're a Beaver basher. You don't take enough time to appreciate the fact we went from, what,
two wins to five wins. No, I think that's phenomenal progress. I do. I wonder what's going to happen next year. I'm hopeful. The defense is going to be better. But they lose Artavis Pierce, Jake Luton, Isaiah Hodgins. That really hurts you. It does. And people don't seem to get this, and I don't understand why. Do you know who the best pass-blocking tackle in the nation was last year?
You tell me this.
I did already. We did this already.
Well, it's not on air.
It's Blake Brandel. As much as people talk about Penei Sewell, and he was a phenomenal, he was the best tackle in the country because he was a great run blocker and pass blocker. Just pass blocking, Blake Brandel was the highest graded left tackle in the country. He's gone. You're losing your stud left tackle, your quarterback, your top receiver, who is the top receiver in the Pac-12. I don't care what the all-conference rankings say, and your best running back, but you are bringing back Jeremiah Jefferson and B.J. Baylor. I think that's essentially a wash. I don't think they'd take any step backward at running back. But I think there's reason to say, I don't necessarily think 6-7 wins is going to be a gimme next year because they're replacing a lot of key pieces. But this recruiting class, step forward. They went from 10th in the Pac-12 to ninth. They landed the number one junior college quarterback in the country. That's a plus. A lot of positives. But if you're just satisfied with ninth, and it's like, if he says anything bad, he's a hater. Well, if you finish in the bottom four in the Pac-12, you should be like, okay, progress, but still, how do we get better? And the way you get better, and I talked about it with Oregon too, Oregon needs to recruit the running back position and wide receiver positions better. That's how they take a step forward. How does Oregon State take a step forward? Recruit better at the high school level. And you're recruiting better at the high school level. You take care of that. You got to do a little bit better job along the offensive line. And you do those things, and suddenly we're talking about 5th, 6th, 7th in the Pac-12 in recruiting rankings. And that's when you get into that Utah territory, when you can potentially say, we'll just coach him up and go win Pac-12 titles anyway. But it's too big a gap to be 9th, 10th, 11th consistently and then still make that jump. You have to put together top 6, 7, 8 classes at least to consistently have a chance, and then coach them up to consistently have a chance to compete at that level. People like to point out, you know, Utah doesn't have that many. Utah flipped a kid that was committed to Ohio State, one of the top corners in the country, flipped from Ohio State to Utah today and signed with the Utes. For as much as their ranking is low, they still every year seem to get 3 or 4 really quality 4-star guys. They did it again this year. We'll wrap up the show talking about USC, the Pac-12 rankings as a whole, whose stock is up, whose stock is down, Clay Helton and USC, next on Recruiting with Andrew Nemec on 1080 The Fan. The first day of the early signing period has come and gone. Day two, pretty quiet, except for Clark Phillips III, the Ohio State commit, the 4-star corner flipping to Utah. Big get for the Utes. They jump all the way up in the last few days from right around 10th or 11th, I think, at the low here within the last week, all the way up to 5th in the Pac-12 recruiting rankings. A great day for them. And if you look at the recruiting rankings as a whole, Washington's number one, Oregon's number two. Washington has 22 commits. Oregon has 20. On an average rating per kid level, Oregon actually would jump up to one if you're really trying to squeeze it to how are we one, and you're an Oregon fan, that would be the way to do it. But Oregon finishes two. Stanford at number three, and man, Stanford, I'm a little surprised this class for Stanford didn't fall apart. If you're a recruit looking at it, you go, we're falling apart. I mean, they have 12 or 13 kids now in the transfer portal, including KJ Costello. Did you know it was that bad? I saw that the other day. Stanford has 12 or 13 kids now in the transfer portal, including their all-conference quarterback. They're having massive problems. I'm a little surprised. I know it's a high academic commit. I still am a little surprised some of these kids didn't go, I'm not going there, man. What the heck's going on?
Well, it makes you think that something's going on with the message that David Shaw is putting out there.
You'd think, right? Something's not right.
But it seems almost inexplicable because that when they hired Jim Harbaugh so many years ago, I think it now it was like 13 years ago they hired Jim Harbaugh, which essentially is the same time they hired David Shaw because he's been on the staff that long. Maybe after 13 years, this message is wearing thin.
But what's crazy about it is how many guys are graduate transfers. I mean, they're losing. It's not like they're losing the freshman or sophomore. For the most part, they're losing their senior leadership, just gutting the program. I mean, it's incredible. You don't see that very often. If that happened at Oregon or Oregon State, we'd be going bonkers that, like, whoa, 9 of the seniors that were supposed to come back are already planning to leave. What happened? Brutal. Stanford finishes 3rd, but I've got real concerns in football about that program. Obviously, they're going to continue to recruit at a fairly high level because they're a high academic institution. UCLA did much better with Chip Kelly this year. That 8, only offering kids on the 8th of the month, must have worked out for them. They finished 4th. Utah, like I mentioned earlier, was 5th. They got 3 4-star recruits, a really nice class from them. And again, if you go by average rating per kid, they only had 17 commitments. They actually climb up into the top 4 in the Pac-12 if you do it that way. A great class from them. Cal with 25 commitments finishes 6th. If you go by average player ranking, they go down into the bottom 3. So a lot of their being 6th has to do with the number of commitments they have. Colorado had 2 4-star recruits. They finished 7th. Arizona State finishes 8th. Very misleading. They only had 15 commitments. They landed 5 4-star prospects. That's as many as anyone except Washington, Oregon, and Stanford. According to 24/7 Sports, if you go by average commit, they finished 4th. They just had a small class, but it's really talented. Their question's going to be, they did what Oregon did a few years ago with Chip. Chip had a year where he had like 6 guys that you were like, these guys can't be on the field together. They're all between 5'10 and 6 foot and between 160 and 180 pounds. Very similar thing from them. All their big-time kids are wide receivers. They're going to have to move somebody. You can't put 6 receivers out there. They've got to figure that out, but a good class from them. Oregon State, we talked about it earlier, finishes 9th in the Pac-12, their best finish since 2013. From an average ranking per commit level, they would actually drop to 10th, but still the average rating per commit would be higher than anything they've had in at least 5 years. A nice class from Jonathan Smith. Did a great job with the JC ranks. Now the next step in the rebuild is doing a little better in the high school market, but did a phenomenal job with JC kids. Also got a big time transfer that didn't count in their class, Charles Moore. He committed months ago. He's already enrolled in school. He was the number 6 defensive end in the country last year. Went to Auburn for just a couple weeks. Didn't like it. Again, he's already on campus and he's got a chance to be an all conference guy. He doesn't count in the rankings. You throw him in there and Oregon State takes another jump forward. Washington State's at number 10, Arizona number 11, and then my God, USC at number 12. For in terms of average ranking per commit, they'd actually be right around 5th or 6th. They only have 11 commits, but even at that, the Pac-12 is a series of haves and have-nots, folks. We've talked about that a number of years. Their average ranking per commit would be 5th or 6th with their 11 commitments, and they still only have 1 4-star recruit. So the teams that get the big-time talent, their average star rating or average rating per recruit, there's a sizable gap between the likes of Washington, Oregon, Stanford, UCLA, USC, Utah this year, and then the whole rest of the Pac-12. You're either in that haves or have-nots, and I don't care if you only have 1 4-star recruit. You're in the have-not category. USC needs to fix it. It needs to get better. Next week, I want to talk about what's left. Oregon State has 2 scholarships available. I think Oregon has 2 or 3 scholarships available. They have to wiggle the numbers a little bit because of Devin Williams. What's left on the table? What can Oregon fans and Oregon State fans expect? Who could they be targeting? Which graduate transfers are of interest? That's what I'll be studying up on next week. I hope you join me to talk about it. That'll be next week on Recruiting with Andrew Nimmick, or 2 weeks from now on Recruiting with Andrew Nimmick on 10 into the Fan, because we're getting ready for Christmas break. Thank you, as always, for listening.
Thanks for joining us for Recruiting with Andrew Nimmick, the show for college recruiting fans with the inside story on the Ducks, the Beavers, the national recruiting scene, and high school prospects across Oregon and Southwest Washington. Read Andrew's latest recruiting news in the Oregonian and Oregon Live, and listen for Andrew's updates throughout the week here on Portland's Sports Leader, 1080 The Fan.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.